ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Today's verse is Canto 5 of Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 14, entitled The Forest of Enjoyment, Text Number 1. Could everyone hear? They cannot hear. The Sanskrit for this verse is very difficult for everyone to chant together. When King Parikshit asked Sukadev Goswami about the direct meaning of the Goswami replied as follows: My dear king, a man belonging to the mercantile community, Vanik, is always interested in earning money. Sometimes he enters the forest to acquire some cheap commodities like wood and earth and sell them in the city at good prices. Similarly, the conditioned soul, being greedy, enters this material world for some material profit. Gradually, he enters the deepest part of the forest, not really knowing how to get out. Having entered the material world, the pure soul becomes conditioned by the material atmosphere, which is created by the external energy under the control of Lord Vishnu. Thus, the living entity comes under the control of external energy, Daivi Maya. Living independently and bewildered in the forest, he does not attain the association of devotees who are always engaged in the service of the Lord. Once in the bodily conception, he gets different types of bodies, one after the other, under the influence of material energy and impelled by the modes of material nature, sattva-guna, rajaguna, and tamaguna. In this way, the conditioned soul goes sometimes to the heavenly planets, sometimes to the earthly planets, and sometimes to the lower planets and lower species. Thus, he suffers continuously due to the different types of bodies. These sufferings and pains are sometimes mixed. Sometimes they are very severe, and sometimes they are not. These bodily conditions are acquired due to the conditioned soul's mental speculation. He uses his mind and five senses to acquire knowledge, and these bring about the different bodies and different conditions. Using the senses under the control of the external energy, Maya, the living entity suffers the miserable conditions of material existence. He is actually searching for relief. But he is generally baffled, although sometimes he is relieved after great difficulty. Struggling for existence in this way, he cannot get the shelter of pure devotees who are like bumblebees engaged in loving service at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Purport by His Divine Grace. A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The most important function in this verse is Hari Guru Charanaravinda Madhukara Anupadavim. In this material world, the conditioned souls are baffled by their activities, and sometimes they are relieved after great difficulty. On the whole, the conditioned soul is never happy. He simply struggles for existence. Actually, his only business is to accept the spiritual master, the Guru, and through him he must accept the lotus feet of the Lord. This is explained by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Lata Beach. People struggling for existence in the forests or cities of the material world are not actually enjoying life. They are simply suffering different pains and pleasures, generally pains that are always inauspicious. They try to gain release from these pains, but they cannot due to ignorance. For them it is stated in the Vedas, Tad vijnanartham sagurum eva abhigacchet. When the living entity is lost in the forest of the material world, in the struggle for existence, his first business is to find a bona fide guru. He is always engaged at the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. After all, if he is at all eager to be relieved of the struggle for existence, he must find a bona fide guru and take instructions at his lotus feet. In this way, he can get out of the struggle. Since the material world is compared herein to a forest, it may be argued that in the Kali Yuga, modern civilization is mainly situated in the cities. A great city, however, is like a great forest. Actually, city life is more dangerous than the life in the forest. If one enters an unknown city without friend or shelter, living in that city is more difficult than living in a forest. There are many big cities all over the surface of the globe, and wherever one looks, he sees the struggle for existence going on 24 hours a day. People rush about in cars going 70 and 80 miles an hour, constantly coming and going, and this sets the scene of the great struggle for existence. One has to rise early in the morning and travel in that car at breakneck speed. There is always the danger of an accident, and one has to take great care. In his automobile, the living entity is full of anxieties and his struggle is not at all auspicious. Apart from human beings, other species like cats and dogs are also struggling very hard day and night for existence. Thus the struggle for existence continues and the conditioned soul changes from one position to another. For a while he is a child, but he has to become a boy. From a boy, he has to change into youth, and from youth to manhood and old age. Finally, when the body is no longer workable, he has to accept a new body in a different species. Giving up the body is called death, and accepting another body is called birth. The human form is an opportunity to take shelter of the bona fide spiritual master, and through him, the Supreme Lord. This Krishna consciousness movement has been started to give an opportunity to all members of the human society who are misled by foolish leaders. No one can get out of this struggle for existence, which is full of miseries, without accepting a pure devotee of the Lord. The material attempt changes from one position to another, and no one actually gains relief from the struggle for existence. The only resort is the lotus feet of a bona fide spiritual master, and through him, the lotus feet of the Lord. Shukadev Goswami is comparing this material world to a dangerous forest where there is great strife and struggle. In great detail, he explains how the conditioned soul, eternal, full of knowledge, full of endless joy, part and parcel of Krishna, whose natural home is that land of love, dedication, and unlimited happiness, somehow is wandering, birth after birth after birth, in the forest of material existence. Have any of you ever lived in the forest? In the forest, at any moment, you may be struck by a venomous snake. You may be attacked by wild animals, leopards, tigers, bears, boars. There's no relief from insects like mosquitoes and spiders that may bite and suck your blood. There's little shelter from wind, cold, heat, rain, snow. To find food is a struggle. Here in this whole material world is compared to such a forest. When we get this bodily conception of life, one after another, due to the influence of material and energy, we are impelled by the threefold misery, by the three modes of nature, to act in various ways. Sometimes the heavenly planets, sometimes the middle planets, sometimes the hellish planets. Different bodies due to different conceptions, and in those conceptions, so many conditions. The only shelter, according to Sukadev Goswami, is the shelter of the association of pure devotees who are like bumblebees engaged in the loving service of the Lord. Srila Prabhupada so nicely explains how in Kali Yuga most people do not live in forests. They live in cities. And herein, Prabhupada explains how the city is more of a forest than a forest. Very dangerous. In fact, even in America, most dangerous places to go are the big cities. They are sometimes called the asphalt jungle. So many predators. At any moment, you could be robbed, you could be raped, you could be beaten, you could be killed. In many cities, there are gangs of criminals who wander like pack packs of wild, dangerous animals, just out of their passion and ignorance, just eager to attack. They attack each other, and they will attack any innocent victim that they may see if they feel they could get something from them. One person, so many examples we can give. One devotee was taking a japa walk in Central Park in New York and was attacked, beaten, put into a coma, hospital. They never found the person. Permanent damage to his very life. It's rare to meet somebody who hasn't been robbed in the cities. New York City is considered to be the greatest city. I remember once I was asked to bring beautiful deities from New Brindavan to New York, Radha Murli Dhar. Beautiful, beautiful marble deities. About the same size as Radha Gopinath. And I had a van, so I was their driver. I believe I was alone. And I drove, it took about 10 hours, and the deities were tied very nicely in the back of the van on beautiful beds. Not beautiful, but simple beds that we made just for them. And I was driving and driving, and when I arrived in New York City, because I put them to rest, and the place that they were meant to be installed, it was all locked up because I arrived in the middle of the night. And I knew that the nature of that place. It's the most common thing for people to just break your windshield, break in your van, and steal everything you have. Hare Krishna. So I was sleeping, and I heard somebody trying to break in. All these people were outside trying to break in. And I was thinking, what to do? These people obviously have weapons and everything. They could steal the deities. They could beat me or kill me. What to do? I have to protect the deities. I had no weapons. They had weapons. But they couldn't see me because there was a curtain. But they were breaking in. They were in the process. They had some device to just open the door. They were just ripping the lock out of the door. So I prayed to Radha Murli Dhar, give me the intelligence to protect you. So I remembered the beautiful song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Tumi to Thakur, to mara kukur. That Krishna, you are my Lord, and I am your dog. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, I will sit at your doorstep, ready to execute any instruction you give me, ready to guard you from all offenders. So I was remembering that song. And meanwhile, I could hear them talking, deep voices, we'll get it, and they're breaking in, just seconds till they're inside. Should I continue? It's 2 o'clock in the morning in New York City, nobody else around, very dark. It's a jungle, and the predators are about to break in, and once they break in, they don't care anything about beating, killing, to steal anything they could find, but to speak of beautiful, rare statues in their eyes. So I heard that there was a gang of people out there and they were breaking in. And I was just meditating on, you are my Lord, I am your dog. So I started to make sounds. Because in America, that's what you do when you want to keep, you have a vicious dog to keep criminals around. So I'd heard them say, it's a dog, it's a vicious dog, and they left. They didn't see me. They were right, I am a dog, but I'm not so vicious, though. If they saw what I look like, I would have been finished. And then I went back. I couldn't. There was no question of sleeping. I lay down again. The deities were on a raised platform. And I was in the back with the curtain shutting us off. And I laid on the floor again. And I was just praying to Krishna. And soon another gang of people, I heard them start breaking in. They went away. Very dangerous place. Like a forest. So much suffering, so much anxiety. The city of Bombay. Why so many security devices? And it is in every city. I recently visited an old friend in the countryside in Germany. They have a nice house, and they're relatively wealthy people. They have nice cars. They have so many nice things in their homes. They've lived there for so many years, about 20 years. They said in 20 years, and they live in a village where there's people around. They said in 20 years they have never locked their door. In the winter they don't, they go out even for days at a time. They may not even close their door. And nobody has ever gone in to take anything. But in Bombay, how many people are like that? It's a forest, it's a jungle. Anything could happen. And yet we're creating these cities for happiness. We're creating these cities. People come here with the conception that they will get security. They will be relieved of pain. But Srila Prabhupada here explains so nicely. He said, in this material world, we are suffering pleasure and pain. For a Vaishnav, material pleasure is a type of suffering. Now, some people may say, why you always talk that this material world is a place of suffering? There's so much happiness, so much pleasure. But for a devotee, even the pleasures of material existence are suffering. And suffering is suffering. What's the difference between one and the other? What is the difference between suffering pain and suffering pleasure? The difference is when you're suffering pain, you know you're suffering. And when you suffer pleasure, you're under an illusion that you're not. But to be bereft of the soul's inherent spiritual nature and the love within is actually a suffering state. And also, if we see the whole picture, Yehi samsparashaja bhoga dukha jonaya evate atyanta vanta konteya nate shuramate buddha. An intelligent person does not take part in the sources of misery, which is the happiness and pleasures of this world. Because such pleasures have a beginning and an end. A wise person does not delight in them. If we see the whole picture, the pleasures of this world are actually our connection to suffering. Because as we become attached to pleasures, we are vulnerable to suffer. And all the things we're attached to are temporary. Dukalayam ashashvatam. Anything temporary is a source of suffering because we become addicted, we become attached. And it's going to be stripped away. The more you enjoy, the more you suffer when you lose it. The more you enjoy, the more you suffer when it frustrates you. The very source of your enjoyment becomes the object of your frustration. Just like a father and mother, they love their children. But to the degree they love their children, how much suffering their children could give them? Yes? By getting sick, by dying, by becoming bad people, by disrespecting them, by becoming drug addicts or alcoholics. Or in India, by marrying someone from another caste. What to speak of joining the Hare Krishna movement and becoming a brahmachari? Very difficult. And as far as the attachment between a husband and wife and how much suffering they can inflict on each other, all of you know better that subject than me. So much. The objects of our pleasure are the greatest objects of our pain. That's the whole story of Maharaj Chitraketu. He wanted a son so bad. He and his wife, they just prayed. They performed yajnas. They begged the great sages for this blessing. Give son. And they got son. Harsha Shok, one who gives pleasure and pain. And to the degree they loved their son and they were attached to their son, how much they suffered when that son died. That's material life. Everything must die. Everyone must die. And because we're not the controllers, ultimately everything is out of our control, especially other living beings. Something like that. We were explaining last night at Mahaprabhu's home that it is the nature of this world, suffering. No one escapes. People ask, why me? But the fact is, everyone, in some way or another, has to suffer. It's just a matter of time. No one escapes. So Krishna comes and speaks Bhagavad Gita. Krishna is the creator of material existence. He knows how it works. And he knows why it works. Krishna says, Abrahma bhuvana loka punar avartanorjana mamupetya tu konteya punar janmana vidyate. He's saying, don't try to make arrangements for happiness in this world because there's nowhere where you'll find it. All of the anxieties of Indra and Swarga Loka, all the way up to Brahmaloka, there's misery. Down to Patalaloka region and everything in between. Everything is temporary. They're all places of misery. But one who comes to my abode never takes birth again in this world. Krishna Krishna tells in Gita, this is why he descends. We were speaking last night how different people celebrate Janmashtami in different ways. The same forms, but with a different motivation. Thousands of people come together all over India and in the world, and they're performing Abhishekam. Then they're doing kirtan, bhajan, sometimes dramas, harikatas. But most people are doing it not understanding who is Krishna or why he comes to this world. They're missing the point. Some people are doing it because it's the tradition of the family and they're trying to respect the traditions of their forefathers. Some people are celebrating Janmashtami because they're expecting some auspicious, pious results. Some people are thinking that it will improve their family life, their occupation, their health, their wealth. Some people are doing it with a conception of getting liberation. Some people really don't know why they're doing it. They're just doing it because you're supposed to do it. But what does Krishna telling us in Gita? He doesn't come to this world for that purpose. And people are bewildered. People say, why do innocent people suffer? Why does God do this? Why do devotees suffer? Why a devotee has to suffer? When a devotee's trying to serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nowhere does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita that he descends into this world to make your material life better. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo viti tatvata tyaktva deham punarajanma naiti mam eti sorajuna. This verse tells so much. We are all taking birth in this world. All the 8,400,000 species of life are taking birth in this world as reactions to their good or bad karma of the past. Karma is so intricate, so complex. Everything we do, everything we say, there will be a reaction. And material nature works so scrutinizingly efficient that everything you've done, everything you've said in all your previous lives are all taken into consideration to give you the particular body you have right now, in the particular family, in the particular species, and everything else. Just to sow, to reap what you have sowed, to receive the reactions of your activities. So yes, everybody is under the laws of nature. We are forced by nature to take birth. But Krishna is transcendental. He is the controller of all controllers. He is Ishvara Parama Krishna, Lord Brahma. He's the secondary creator of this world. He knows how material nature works and why. Lord Brahma explains how it's difficult for him to create a situation where he knows it's made to make people suffer. But he also understands the purpose underlying it, that suffering is to give us the eventual awakening to our real need. And that is the shelter of the Lord. So when the Supreme Personality of Godhead descends in this world, he is above and beyond the modes of material nature. He is above time. Karma cannot influence the Lord. Somebody was recently telling me that they believe that Krishna had to live in hell for some time because of how he promoted war in Kurukshetra. But this is not what the Vedas teach us. The Supreme Absolute Truth is not subjected to karma. Krishna tells in Gita how he is the controller of the whole material energy. Everything works under his direction. Ishvara Parama Krishna. He is the supreme controller of all controllers. So when Krishna comes, it's out of his love, it's out of his kindness. And one who understands the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities, what is the result? Krishna doesn't say, you get a better job, you get good grades, you get a handsome man and a beautiful wife, you have nice children, you have nice wealth, you don't get diseased, and everything is very nice. He doesn't say that. Krishna says, one who understands the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities never takes birth in this material world again, but attains my abode. Daiviheshu gunamai mama maya duratyaya. This material nature is very difficult to overcome. The three modes of material nature are like ropes that just keep us bound up. But one who surrenders to me, one who takes shelter of me, can easily cross beyond it. That is Krishna's purpose for coming, to give us shelter, to give us a state of consciousness transcendental to the sufferings of this world. Whoever you are, man, woman, or young or old, rich or poor, Indian, American, Russian, African, Pakistani, Hindu, Buddhist, Muslim, Jew, Christian, Jain, Parsi, atheist, rich or poor, this is the place Krishna explains. Dukalayama Shashvatam. It's a place of suffering. And we see it all around us. Padam padam yabit padam datesham. There's danger at every step. Look at the world today. New Orleans, one of the greatest, most important cities in all of America, one of the prominent cities. A place where millions and millions of people go every year for vacations, for pleasure. What can the United States Army, what could the President, what could all the scientists and space researchers and all philanthropists, what could they do? One wind has just devastated it. And tsunami hit the shores of South India, Indonesia, Sri Lanka. Terrorists crippled the country when they killed thousands of lives in the World Trade Center. And such rampant diseases, cancer, hepatitis, heart disease, spreading everywhere like wildfire. Mental illness, depression, so much crime. Everyone, whoever they may be, is subjected to suffering at any moment. That's what Krishna tells. So then when we suffer with people, why is God doing this? This person's a devotee, why is it happening to him? What is the beauty of being a devotee? When or if it happens, you take shelter of Krishna and transcend it. That's why Krishna descends to this world. To help us transcend a place of misery. In the book of St. Thomas, Jesus said, this world is a bridge. Cross over it, but build no house upon it. but how much we're eager to make our house and our estate and our whole little empire in this world. Like building castles in the sand on the shore of the ocean of material existence. In due course of time, the waves of material existence will wash everything away. And what do we have left? Sorrow, fear, anxiety. This place is called Kunta. And nothing will ever change that. Even in Satya Yuga, the miseries were different, but it was Kunta then too. What to speak of Kali Yuga? In fact, the sages worship Kali Yuga as a better time to live than Satya Yuga. Why? Because the sufferings and the anxieties are so obvious, so evident. And Krishna makes such a wonderful concession that simply by chanting the holy names we can attain the supreme perfection of liberation. But in Kali Yuga, people have the opportunity to really take shelter of the holy name. So let us not be confused or bewildered by this. Don't think that because you're a devotee, you're going to have a better material life. You may or you may not. But material existence is a place of suffering for everybody. We become devotees because we want to transcend the material existence. And Krishna explains that is why he descends into this world. To teach people how to find the kingdom of God in their own hearts and find their peace, their love, and their happiness within. And when you find it within, you'll become so attached to Krishna within your own heart. Antakali chamameva smaran maktva kalevaram. At the time of death, you naturally remember Krishna and go back to his eternal abode. That is Krishna consciousness. We have seen people who are suffering, who are dying, but who are finding infinitely more happiness because they're Krishna conscious, taking shelter of Krishna, than the gross materialists are, even enjoying in their nightclubs and in their beautiful cars and homes. Because although their body may be racked with pain, and there's no future to their materialistic life, they're taking shelter of the sweetness of Krishna, his name, his form, his devotees, and are finding inner satisfaction. Materialistic person are trying to enjoy externally, but internally there's simply anxiety, fear, emptiness. And they're trying to forget it all through external diversions of the consciousness. But a devotee finds the truth of Krishna, the beauty of Krishna, the sweetness of Krishna, and ultimately the shelter of Krishna. So when devotees celebrate Janmashtami, when devotees chant the holy names of the Lord or perform their worship to the Lord, it is very different than the karmis, the yogis, or the jnanis. Devotees do not want just the negativity of freedom from suffering. The devotees don't want just another situation which will bring about a different variety of suffering. Devotees don't want to be further infatuated with false ego by our knowledge and our powers. Devotees want to humble themselves and completely take shelter of the all-loving mercy of the Lord. So devotees don't say, "Why is this happening to me?" It happens to everybody. But Krishna's there waiting for us, waiting to give us full shelter, waiting to promote us to the spiritual stratum of consciousness, ready to give us entrance into Vaikuntha. That's why Krishna comes, and that's what a real devotee is aspiring for. Tate nukampam susamikshamano bunjana evatmakritam vipagam. Therefore, when sufferings come to a devotee isn't confused. He's not expecting something beautiful, material. What's beautiful? The association of devotees is a beautiful thing, and we always have that. The holy name, the form of the Lord on the altar, the pastimes of the Lord, the beauty of the Lord, the love of the Lord, these are beautiful things, and nothing and no one can ever take that away from us if we are humble and sincere. That's what Krishna is giving us. Do we think that being a devotee, we will not get old and die? We must. But what is our consciousness? Happiness is not a physical thing. Happiness is your state of consciousness. And the supreme happiness is Krishna consciousness, identifying with our eternal identity with God. That is the sole reason that Krishna comes to this world. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. Krishna has descended from Goloka in the form of his holy name. Why? Dinahina Yatachilo Harinam Udharilo Tara Sakshi Jagai Madhai. The holy name is so powerful. It can give the highest bliss, supreme shelter to anyone and everyone, even the most sinful. And Jagai and Madhai are evidence of this. But we must take shelter of the holy name. We must take shelter of the deity. We must take shelter of Harikatha. Maharaj Parikshit was not hearing Krishna's pastimes in Srimad Bhagavatam as a matter of a formality or as a matter of a religious principle. He wasn't doing it for piety. He had 7 days to live. He was taking shelter of Shukadev Goswami and taking shelter of the message of Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, he was in ecstasy. We're listening to Bhagavatam. Are we in ecstasy? Are we totally self-satisfied? Parikshit Maharaj, he told Shukadev Goswami that previously I didn't have water for just a few hours, and I was so overcome with the anxiety of thirst that I lost my intelligence, I offended the Rishi Samik. And so many things happened after that. But now, it's been days and days and days, I haven't touched a drop of water, a morsel of food, no sleep. And I'm completely satisfied. I'm feeling no inconvenience, no hunger, no thirst, because the ambrosial nectar of Harikatha is flowing out of your mouth into my heart through my ears. Do we get that experience when we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam? We're struggling to stay awake, or thinking, when will class end, when prasad will begin? Or so many thoughts of the minds, anguishes of business and anguishes of personal relationships and anguishes of the body and all these other things and insecurities and mystery of what is going to take place tomorrow or the next day. But Parikshit Maharaj was totally satisfied and fearless hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. Why are we not experiencing that? Because Parikshit Maharaj was taking shelter. He was not looking for material relief. He was not looking for material benefits. He was not hoping that by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, it would overcome his curse and he would not die in 7 days. That was not his motivation. He was content to die in 7 days or 7 seconds. It didn't matter. He was taking shelter of Krishna through Krishna's devotees speaking Harikatha. Ye yata mam prapadyante tam stataiva bhajamyaham. As you surrender to me, I reveal myself accordingly. That is what Gita is about. Sarva dharman purityaja mam ekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshai samima sucha. Abandon all varieties of religion and surrender to me. I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. But how does Krishna deliver us from all sinful reactions? By raising our consciousness to the transcendental plane. By raising our consciousness beyond birth and beyond death. Not by changing our material situation. Krishna is so kind. He's so merciful. The material world is an expression of Krishna's love. He creates the world as a place to rectify those who by their own free will have rejected Krishna and come here. Now, rejecting Krishna is not like in this world where someone rejects their lover and their lover becomes vengeful and brokenhearted. Krishna's he's absolutely self-satisfied. He's Rasaraj. He's enjoying with Srimati Radharani eternally. He doesn't need you. It's not that his lila is depending on us. So he needs us to get back there as soon as possible. We need to get back. Because Krishna loves us, he knows he has created us to be perfect shelters of love. Krishna's Vishaya, the supreme object of everyone's love, and we are Ashraya. Our nature is to find the greatest happiness eternally by giving shelter to Krishna's love within our heart, by being the receptacle of love to offer to Krishna. That is the only happiness of the soul. There could be no other happiness for the soul except loving Krishna. But we have rejected that love. And we are, therefore, Krishna wants us to come back and enjoy it. But the love has to be real. The love has to be with free will. It's not mechanical. Love is based on service. So therefore, this material world is ultimately designed in such a way that we will be frustrated by all attempts to enjoy separately, and we will discover once again our real true self-interest. And Krishna comes to this world again and again and again, yada yada hi dharmasya, to remind us. He's so kind. So the problems of the material world, although a devotee is paradukaduki, we feel sorrow to see people suffering on any level. It's not that when you become transcendental, you become callous and hard-hearted to people's physical and materialistic suffering. No, a devotee's heart is very soft. The sufferings people are having in this world break our heart. But we understand. We understand this material existence as it is. We're not surprised. We're not bewildered by whatever material nature does to anyone or everyone at any time. But we're trying to give people the opportunity for real relief. And that is the sum and substance of this verse that Shukadev Goswami is speaking today. Powerful verse. How a person is struggling in this forest of material existence, but how the only shelter is the pure devotees who are like bumblebees engaged in the loving service at the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. So first we must have this determination. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that we should not accept a spiritual master as a fashion. We should not accept a spiritual master expecting some material benefits. We should accept a spiritual master because we really want to transcend and get out of this materialistic consciousness. We have to be convinced that materialistic life is not the place we want to be. We're strangers in a foreign land. And the pure devotees, why do they give us shelter? Because they bring us to Krishna, the supreme and only shelter. Man manabhava mad bhakto madhyajim nam namaskuru mam evaishashi satyam te prati jani priyoshime. Always think of me, become my devotee, worship me, offer your homage unto me. In this way you will come to me without fail. I promise you this, my dear friend. Krishna performs so many wonderful pastimes. Krishna speaks the truth of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna manifests his beautiful relationships with his devotees, and through those relationships, he is called upon by so many names. Yashoda Nandana, Nanda Nanda, Radharaman, Gopika Kanta, Lalita Nath. Krishna, so many names. And we call upon any of these names, and we will be saved. We will find shelter. That is his mercy. And we must have that intelligence. Otherwise, if we're expecting something else, we can easily lose our faith by seeing things that just aren't working according to our expectations. Faith has to be based on knowledge in order to be strong. And what is knowledge? Krishna says that all living beings are in me, they are of me, they are mine. Not this world. In Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Srila Sanatana Goswami describes various levels of consciousness a person can enter into in spiritual life. That pilgrim, he was searching for the highest truth. He met that one very wealthy man performing sacrifice. I believe it was at Prayag. And he saw such a devotee, so much devotion, offering so much of his hard-earned wealth for the pleasure of Krishna, for the welfare of others. He inquired from him, "How great you are. Please tell me." He said, "Actually, I'm not very great. Indra, he's great. When he performs yajna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead personally appears every time he does it." the Lord's not appearing to me. So he went to Indra and praised Indra. Now, devotees never think they're very great. This is the nature of a devotee. A devotee always thinks himself servant of the servant of the servant. A devotee always feels that all others are better than me. This is the test. If you want to test your consciousness to see how much you're really making advancement in spiritual life, just examine your consciousness. Do I think I'm better than others, or do I feel that all others are better than me? It's quite embarrassing, is it not? If you think you're better than others, then you're not very deep in your Krishna consciousness. It's still superficial. The deeper you go, the humbler you become. It's an amazing quality, is it not? It's opposite of materialistic life. In material life, the higher you become, the more accomplished and successful you are, the more you think you're great, the more your pride is inflated. But in Krishna consciousness, the higher your consciousness, the more you're successful, the greater you become, the humbler you feel yourself to be. And the more you see yourself less than others. How is this possible? I've been studying Srimad Bhagavatam for 30 years, so many realizations, so much service. How could a new devotee be better than me? Hare Krishna. Doesn't make sense. It's not logical. Let's be practical. I'm better. But that's not the way a devotee thinks. Because spiritual consciousness does not work by the same mechanisms as material logic. That's something we have to understand very carefully. That's when we transcend the modes of material nature, when we're talking about the spiritual stratum of consciousness, it's a chintya. It's inconceivable. It's not under the laws of logic or reason or any material sciences. In fact, Krishna consciousness very directly, animately defies the laws of logic, reason, and what's possible or impossible. Hare Krishna. Because it's of another substance. It's spiritual. In material world, the greater you are, the more your false ego is inflated. But in Krishna consciousness, the more we know Krishna, the humbler we become. Now, we can apply logic to it. We cannot understand it. But we can apply logic to it. Ultimately, nothing spiritual can really be understood in truth without the mercy of the Lord. Nothing is intellectual. You can't grasp Krishna by your intelligence. You cannot grasp the truth of bhakti by your memory. You cannot grasp it by any of your material talents or attributes. We use all these things in his service. Ragadveshava muktaishtu vishayanandriyaishtaran atmavashar vidheyatma prasadamadigachchati. We follow all these regulative principles to get the mercy of the Lord. But it's that mercy that carries us beyond material conceptions. There's no other way. Ultimately, we are simply begging for mercy. If you're not begging, you're not going to get it. When we're delivering Bhagavad Katha to so many people, we're not the givers. We're just doing it as an act of service to Guru and the Vaishnavas in a spirit of begging for mercy.
Krishna be pleased with this feeble attempt?
And that mercy can give us a true understanding. We were discussing last night that there are people who memorize the entire Bhagavad Gita and can sing it eloquently. But it's billions of times better to really understand one verse.
Yes, it is.
Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo viti tatvata tyaktva deham punara janma naiti mameti sorjuna.
Do we understand this one verse? If you understand this one verse, you will be in ecstatic love and you will go back to Godhead.
Daivi yeshu gunamai aham sarvasya prabhavo mata sarvam pravartate iti matva bhajante mam buddha bhava samanbata.
How many of us understand that verse? Intellectually, we may have some conceptions. Intellectually, we may be able to give a lecture series for the next 2 years on this one verse. And we can keep 100,000 people enthralled in rapt attention without going to sleep. Not even moving when rats crawl over them because they're so absorbed in the katha.
But do we understand it? We can only understand it by the mercy of Krishna. If we just understand this one verse, our lives are perfect. That one Brahmin in Sri Rangam, he didn't understand any of the verses intellectually. He didn't even know what they meant. But he was thinking of Krishna with his beautiful dark form like a rain cloud holding the reins of Arjuna's chariot, showing his love to his devotee. That's all. Mahaprabhu said, you have understood the Bhagavad Gita perfectly. And he gave him prema bhakti. He didn't even understand the verse. He just understood Krishna speaking the Gita. He understood the very essence of the whole Gita. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, if we understand one sloka of Srimad Bhagavatam, we'll attain the ultimate supreme perfection. If we memorize the whole Bhagavatam, that's wonderful if we have the power. But the substance of our devotional service is how we actually understand it, how we realize it. And that realization only comes through kripa, mercy. Krishna's kripa sindhu. He's an ocean of mercy. But we have to dive deeply. We have to take shelter of that mercy. And the only way to do that is we must be very humble. You cannot call out for mercy if you're proud. You have to be very humble. So yes, as a devotee gradually understands Krishna by pleasing Krishna through our service attitude and by our sincere chanting of his name and hearing his beautiful glories, then we realize the beauty and the glory of Krishna. And we realize naturally our own insignificance in compared to Krishna. Ainanda tanuja kinkaram patidam pam mam vishame bhavambudo kripayata vapata pankajastita duli sadrisam vichintaya. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is teaching us. He's not trying to become God. He's not trying to become a great acharya in this world. He just wants to be a tiny little speck of dust under the feet of Krishna. That is the ultimate aspiration of the greatest devotees. We don't want to be great. We just want to be a speck of dust under the feet of Krishna and his devotees. That is called love. That is love. What do we mean by love?
if you want to be a speck of dust under somebody's feet, then what are you thinking of that person? What is the dignity of the substance of your appreciation of that person? It's unbelievable. Think about it. How many of you want to be a speck of dust under someone's feet? You have to really think that person is so great, so glorious, so attractive. You have to have so much love and appreciation for that person to be longing and praying and performing yajnas and sacrifices for a position of a speck of dust under his feet. That's how much Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is appreciating Krishna. And if you perceive Krishna, that is our natural outpouring of heart, is we want to take the most menial, humble, simple position in his loving service. If you want to be a gopi, then you'll probably become proud in this world. If you want to be a speck of dust under the feet of the gopis, then by their mercy, they will make you a gopi. Yes? So a devotee doesn't want the highest position. A devotee wants the lowest position of service to the highest people. And by doing so, we are elevated. How wonderful. The devotees are always thinking that others are greater than them. And that is the test. Are we making spiritual advancement? Even when we're preaching to someone, we never think I'm better than them. We're their servant. We are their servant. And by repeating the words of our spiritual master, we are serving them. It is not my words. That is Krishna consciousness. So the pilgrim went to Indra. And there he saw right before his eyes. He's doing yajna and Vishnu just personally appears. Personally takes the offerings of the yajna and gives benedictions. Oh, you are so great. I am not great. Brahma is great. I'm so afraid of demons and I have lust in my heart and I have so many problems. You know, just look at my record. I am not a great person. Krishna comes out of his causeless mercy, out of pity on me. He comes. But I'm not great. Lord Brahma, he is great. He doesn't get implicated in all these horrible things that I get implicated in. He's not distracted from his determination like I am. He is a great soul. So he went to Brahmaloka. And he saw Brahma, personal associate of the Lord, whenever he prays. When all the demigods and the heavenly planets are being disturbed by asuras and difficult situations, they all approach Brahma. And it's Brahma who, on behalf of all the devatas, meditates on Krishna, and Krishna reveals his mercy to him. Powerful position. Brahma says, I am not great. I am very small. But Lord Shiva, he is Mahadev. He is great. He went to Shiva. And in this way, he was gaining to... He was understanding, and Sanatana Goswami is revealing to the world the various levels of devotion. Lord Shiva is Vaishnavanam Yata Shambhu. He's great as Vaishnava. But how that pure devotion enters into more complete, more intimate, condensed experiences of love.
Lord Shiva, all he could do is think of his own faults.
But Prahlad Maharaj, he is great.
Little Prahlad,
what was his devotional service? Any situation, he was fearlessly remembering Krishna.
Last night at Kar Center, Radha Vrindavan Natabara Temple, during our lecture, a mouse was crawling on people and they were jumping up and screaming. Of course, that's natural. That's natural. Brahmacharis would probably also do that. Even I've seen sannyasis. It's just a natural thing, a reaction. But Prahlad Maharaj, he was thrown into a pit of venomous snakes and he didn't jump up and scream. What is the substance of Prahlad's love? Fearless devotion. Just remembering Krishna so intensely. Taking shelter of Krishna and his name. Lord Narasingadev, one of the most important of all avatars of Vishnu, manifested himself simply out of love for Prahlad. And yet Prahlad, how is it that he is so advanced? Trinadapi suniche nataror iva sihishnuna. He's only seeing his defects. He's only seeing his shortcomings. Yes, I remember Krishna. And because Krishna's causelessly merciful out of pity on me, he saved me in so many circumstances. But Hanuman, look at the service he's rendering. So that is a higher level of Krishna consciousness. Hanumanji, such a servant in the Dasya Ras. Anything that is asked of him, he's just ready and willing to do. Nothing's possible, nothing's impossible. Find Sita. Jump across the ocean. Burn the city of Lanka. Harivo. How would you like to do that? Jump across an ocean and then be all alone in Sri Lanka at the time of Ravana. Kumbhakarna. Indrajit. Do you know how much security they had there? Unbelievable. They had walls, they had guards everywhere. And if you were caught trespassing, they didn't take you to the court where it would take 5 or 10 years for a decision to be made. And then after the decision made, you had the chance to appeal. That was not the way Sri Lanka was. If there was the slightest suspicion about who you were or why you were there, just tortured, crushed, and killed immediately. No questions asked. And Hanuman, all alone in Lanka, absolutely fearless. Absolutely fearless. Just going all over the city, seeing exactly what its strong points, what its weak points, what the armies were like. He wanted to report everything to Ram. And then he went right to the Ashoka Grove and gave the message of Ram to Sita. And he was such a spontaneous, ecstatic servant. He already did his mission. He did it. He gave Sita his message. Took such immense risk, so much trouble to do it. But he was such a servant, he wanted to do something extra. So he tore apart the Ashoka Grove just to get Ravana's attention. Because he wanted to speak to Ravana face to face. And he did. He burned the city, jumped back. And during the war, when Lakshman was injured, Hanuman, Ram, get that herb from Himalayas. And Hanuman just jumped, picked up a mountain and brought it back. Service. 24 hours a day, for all eternity, Hanuman is eager, anxious,
for service.
But Hanumanji, he didn't think anything good about himself.
All over India, we're worshiping Hanuman. Every holy place, Hanuman is one of the protectors of the Dham. Even Vrindavan, Hanuman is a protector of Dham. Such a great personality.
But Hanumanji, yes, I'm serving, but look, Lord Ram has left me.
But I'm not an, I don't have intimacy with the Lord. Not like the Pandavas. They are the Lord's friends.
So he went to the Pandavas. And the Pandavas,
Krishna's the message carrier for Yudhisthira. Krishna honors Yudhisthira so much that he's willing to go and do mediations for him.
Arjuna,
Krishna's his chariot driver. He's eating with him. He's laying with him. He's joking with him.
Friends. But the Pandavas, we're here in Hastinapur.
But Krishna, we're good friends, yes. But he's living with the Yadus. They are the greatest. They are the greatest devotees.
So he went to Dwarka and saw how Krishna's living daily with the Yadus so intimately. Ugrasen is the king. And all the Yadus are saying, we are not very dear to Krishna. Who is most dear?
Uddhav. Krishna's constant friend. He went to Uddhava.
And then Uddhava revealed, there is no one more dear than the residents of Vrindavan.
Although Krishna's body is here, his heart is always in Braj Bhumi, in Vrindavan. Because that is the place of Madhurya Ras.
The place where everyone is attached to the sweetness of Krishna's personality.
It is not crippled by the reverential mood of honoring Krishna as the Supreme Lord. Unconditional. Unconditional in the sense whether Krishna's God or not God is not even a thought. We love Krishna because he's Krishna.
There, the cowherd boys are intimately playing with Krishna as friends.
The elder gopis are loving Krishna as their own intimate child.
And the damsels of Braj, the young class of gopis, their love for Krishna is the most intimate, ecstatic lover. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains that this is the crescendo, the summit, the highest perfection of spiritual realization. The love of the gopis. Nothing can compare to the intimacy that the gopis have with Krishna. Why are the gopis experiencing the highest ecstasy? Because they're giving Krishna the highest ecstasy. As you give, you receive. Because their love is the most pure and selfless and concentrated with intensity.
We should know that when we talk of gopis, we are speaking about the highest subject of all subjects.
When you go to university, if you're studying mathematics, there's addition, subtraction, it's called arithmetic. Above that is mathematics.
algebra, and all of these other, it's a higher level. Then you go to higher and higher realms, trigonometry, very high levels. The higher it is, the more difficult to understand, and the more you need very, very careful training. You have to understand all the lower forms to even conceive of the higher forms. Yes? And these are mundane subjects. But when we are talking about transcendental subject matter, this is the ultimate science of all sciences. And the love of the gopis is the topmost. Beyond Brahma, beyond Shiva, beyond Prahlad, Hanuman, beyond the impersonal Brahman, far beyond all of the mystical tricks of the yogis, is the love of the gopis. It is the most dignified, elevated state. And we must see it in that way. We should not take it cheaply. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that we should understand the love of the gopis by always keeping it above our heads as the highest ideal. And we should never think that we're qualified to enter into that realm. If we're humble and we keep that as our highest ideal above our heads and perceive it and approach it with great, great dignity, not with carelessness, not with frivolity, and we serve with that consciousness, then by the power of the great Vaishnavas, we are lifted to that plane. We cannot climb to that sphere. We cannot break into it unless we are totally pure in heart. Unless the great souls, by their causeless mercy, bring us into the entrance of that realm of love and dedication. We are trespassers. All a trespasser can do in the spiritual realm is lick the outside of the bottle of the honey. You can't really taste it. Now, when you're lipping the outside of the bottle, there's the imagination that you're tasting it, but it's not real. It's not substantial. So when Srila Prabhupada and the bona fide acharyas discuss the gopis' love for Krishna, it is with the highest esteem and dignity, and they're trying to teach us the proper approach. It's not just something frivolous that with our mundane minds that we can just, you know, joke about and realize. It's not like that. It's a very high topic. Within the gopis, there is not a tinge of lust. We cannot enter into that realm until our heart is free from any tinge of lust. That means any desire for material enjoyment. What is the difference between lust and love? It is very simple in explanation, but very difficult to comprehend. Any desire or aspiration we have to satisfy ourselves is lust. But when our desire is purely for the satisfaction of Krishna, that is love. If we desire any benefits, if we desire even profit, adoration, or distinction, and we're not on the platform of love. We're on the platform of lust. Now, we may be devotees. We may be chanting. We may be learning Srimad Bhagavatam. We may be preaching. We may be senior. But we must be honest.
Are we on the platform of love or lust? To the degree we're selflessly serving for the satisfaction of Krishna with no expectation of anything in return, that is love. To the degree anything, expectation of expectation from anyone, for anything, for myself, that is lust. The gopi's position is revealed by Mahaprabhu. Ashlisya vapadaratam panashtumam adarshanam maramahatam kurotuva yathadata tavidatatu lampato matpurananatastu se evanaparaha. This is the nature of gopi's love. I am the eternal servant of Krishna unconditionally. If Krishna wants to give joy to my heart by being present before me, or if he likes, he can trample upon me directly or indirectly. Or if he wants, he can make me brokenhearted by neglecting me, not being present before me, even for very, very long duration of time. Krishna has every right to deal with me in any way he pleases, because I am his servant unconditionally. We know the esteem of the gopi's love. When Krishna had headache and Narada Muni was traveling around trying to get the medicine of the dust of the devotees, the jnanis wouldn't give it, the yogis wouldn't give it, even the queens of Dwarka would not give it. Ah, Satyabhama, Rukmini, the dust of our feet on Krishna's head, impossible, we will go to hell. But when he went to Vrindavan, immediate gopis scraping every piece of dust they can find on their feet. They were scraping it all, putting it in nice little packages and sending it. Do you not know what will be the result of putting your feet on Krishna's head? The dirt from your feet? Yes, of course. We know the scriptures. We may go to hell, but we don't mind. That's not a concern. Our concern is not whether we go to hell. Our concern is Krishna's headache. If our going to hell for the rest of eternity will pacify Krishna's headache for even one moment, it will be our life and soul and ultimate aspiration in life to go to hell. Their pleasure is only Krishna. What is that consciousness? Supremely exalted. Willing to forsake anything and everything for Krishna. Krishna played his flute under Bamsi Vat on bank of Yamuna, and the gopis renounced everything. Now we read about it, but we do not understand how at that time, in that civilization, in India, what they did was so violently and aggressively against all social traditions. To give up your children, to give up your husbands, to give up your prestige, to give up your mothers, your fathers, your everything, and know that you'll never be allowed to come back. No turning back. When they ran out that door, they understood. They were rejecting. They were leaving everything behind. They were burning the bridge. They would never be welcome back. It's not like, you know, join the ashram and see how you like it for 6 months, and then if you don't, you could always go back home and you could get a job and go back to school and all of it. The gopis, it wasn't those conveniences that we have. Yes? We become devotees and we may give up so many things, but we know that if
if worse comes to worse, we could always go back. And somehow or other, I'll make my life again. But the way the civilization was in those times when the gopis left, it was forever. They were renouncing their children, their mothers, their fathers, their sisters, their brothers, their homes, their comforts. And it wasn't that they were going to go out and get jobs and make a living and build a new house for themselves. They were going out to live in the forest. Hare Krishna. I mean, think about it. Put yourself in those shoes. Perhaps we would just be happy listening to Krishna's flute from home. No, they didn't even consider. They didn't even consider it for even, as Shyamananda Prabhu was saying yesterday, a nimesha, even a fraction of a second. Shyamananda Prabhu gave beautiful class yesterday. I was secretly listening to every word. What is a nimesha? When your upper eyelid touches your lower eyelid. When it blinks without your knowledge. It's just that blinking. Not even a 1/12 of a second. The gopis didn't even consider it for that amount of time. Yes, they were leaving everything. Their comforts, their securities, their loved ones, their home, all their past. They were going to be condemned as being the worst possible thing a woman could be called in a civilized society was unchaste. There is no filthy, dirty word that could cut a person's heart than for a chaste woman to be called unchaste. And they would be blamed by the whole society, even the Brahmins, even their own parents, even the sadhus. They would all unchaste, rejected. They were willing to endure all that. And they didn't care anything for their own happiness. Their only thought was, Krishna wants us. Krishna's called us with his flute. He wants us to be there with him. They went. That is the substance of gopi surrender. That is love. No spirit in any way for their own enjoyment. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains the nature of gopi's love. 100,000% is only for Krishna's satisfaction. They never, ever, ever want anything for themselves. Even when we read sometimes the gopis are talking about how Krishna's giving them so much satisfaction. They're only saying it for Krishna's satisfaction because Krishna enjoys seeing his devotees enjoying. The gopis don't want to enjoy. But they're willing to enjoy only because they know it makes Krishna happy. Otherwise, they care nothing for that enjoyment. If their suffering makes Krishna happy, they will be happy to suffer. If their enjoyment makes Krishna happy, they're willing to enjoy. This is selfless love. Ahoi tikiya pradihata. And when they came to Krishna, so simple, offering their body, their mind, their words, and their lives to Krishna, Krishna was overwhelmed. But then how did Krishna deal with them? He rejected them. After all that, he rejected them. This is the substance of the gopis' love. Krishna said, go back home. They said, we cannot go back home. It's not possible. We'll never be accepted again. We've left everything for you. Everything we've left for you only. Krishna says, oh, you have seen the forest. You've seen the beautiful moonlight. You've heard the birds singing so nicely. And you've met me. That's why you came to meet me. Now go back home. It's not proper for you to be here like this. So Krishna's rejecting them. Ashlisya vapadaratam panashtumam. He was trampling upon their hearts. Profuse tears were pouring from their eyes, soaking the ground and making it muddy. Never thinking of anything for themselves, only for Krishna. So when Krishna performs Raslila with the gopis, it is the supreme manifestation of divine love. There is no question of any material experience. It's the absolute opposite of lust. And Krishna tells gopis, Na paraye hum. Krishna admits to the gopis that there's nothing he could do to repay them. Krishna in Bhagavad Gita has explained, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. He's the proprietor of everything that exists. He's the supreme origin of all spiritual and material worlds. All the Vaikuntha planets, and how much wealth is in the Vaikuntha planets. In this material world, there's wealth here in this earth. In Swargaloka, there's billions of times more wealth. In Brahmaloka, there's billions of times more wealth than that. In Vaikuntha Loka, there's infinitely greater wealth than that. And in Goloka Vrindavan, one speck of dust has more value than all the wealth in all the Vaikuntha planets. Hare Krishna. So what is Krishna's treasury? And he is the supreme proprietor and controller of everything. Forever. And Krishna tells gopis, with all that I have, in an entire lifetime of Lord Brahma, 311 trillion years, I have no power to repay you for your love. The amount of satisfaction that you are giving me by your affection has conquered me. I have no power to repay you. So please be satisfied with your own affection for me. Krishna's a debtor forever. Krishna's conquered by the gopis' love forever. That is the power of their selflessness. And that ecstatic experience of Krishna's pastimes with gopis is the purest, highest substance of spiritual ecstasy for Krishna, and he reciprocates with his gopis. This is the spiritual world. This is why the greatest renunciates, they have the highest esteem for the gopis' love. If there was any material tinge of desire in their hearts, anything even slightly resembling kama, would Shukadev Goswami be interested in it? Shukadev Goswami, he's from the spiritual world as a parrot of the gopis. He knows the substance of their love. He's a sannyasi who doesn't even differentiate between a male and female because he just doesn't even take the time to bother to think that people have bodies. Yes.
He just sees the soul. For him, all bodies are just like pieces of wood or stone, just material elements, no concern. That was his liberated condition. But yet he's in ecstasy, tasting divine sweetness, describing the gopi's love for Krishna. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, crest jewel of all sannyasis, Madhavendra Puri, uncompromised in their renunciation. Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami. These were people who absolutely abandoned all material designations. Sannyasis, in the strictest sense. Nobody could follow the type of renunciation they did. Raghunath Das Goswami, if anyone tries to imitate his renunciation, they would not survive. But yet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Goswamis, and all these greatest of all renunciates, they consider the most dignified, esteemed level of pure love to only be within the hearts of the gopis. This is not a joke. This is not just some superficial thing where people, you know, play music and hit sticks against, dance with sticks and think that we're like gopis. The gopis aren't hitting sticks. They're expressing inconceivable pure surrender of their hearts to please Krishna. Eternally, for all time, their only thought in their mind is to please Krishna. And the scriptures and our acharyas explain there are different classifications of gopis that Krishna enjoyed with within this world. There is the Nitya Siddha gopis. They are the gopis that have descended from Goloka Vrindavan. They have never been conditioned by materialistic life. When Sri Sri Radha Govinda descend into this world, they bring their entourage of their most intimate loving associates. They descend into this world to assist the Lord in his loving pastimes. And there are the Sadansita gopis, the gopis who have achieved that position by their devotional service. Amongst them there are several classifications. The Shruti Chari gopis. In the Puranas, it is described that the personified Vedas were offering their prayers to Krishna. And in their hearts awakened the desire of conjugal love. And they prayed to Krishna to be his lovers. And because they offered their prayers with such pure devotion, Krishna gave them the opportunity, the benediction, that at the end of the Dwapar Yuga, when he descends into this world, they would be gopis. And there's the Rishichari gopis. When Sri Ramchandra was in Dandakaranya forest, pure-hearted sages who worship Gopal, they desired to serve Lord Ramchandra as his lovers. But Sri Ramchandra explained that in this avatar, I only have one wife, and that is Sita. And I established the highest principles of mundane morality to teach the world. But in my incarnation of Krishna, Krishna is the original source of all incarnations. He is Swayam Bhagavan. He is the full-fledged absolute truth, personality of Godhead. In Krishna, the absolute truth manifests the fulfillment of the most intimate desires of all various forms of devotees. He said, at that time you will take birth in the wombs of the gopas and gopis. And there were other gopis who also achieved through other means perfection of sadhana in their previous lives. And amongst these gopis, there are five basic categories. There is the sakis, loving, loving servants of Srimati Radharani and Krishna. And the nitya saktis, eternally so dearly intimate to Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. And each of them have different roles they play in the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. And there is the prana sakis and the priya sakis and the most intimate chief of all gopis is the paramapresta sakis, of which are the eight sakis, Lalita, Vishakha, and so forth. Now, of the eight sakis, these are not jivatmas. These intimate gopis in the inner circle of Krishna's lila of Goloka are direct expansions of the body of Srimati Radharani. They are none different than Srimati Radharani. Srimati Radharani is the supreme reservoir of all love. She's the ultimate crescendo of prema. In fact, she is none different than Krishna. Radha Krishna Pranaya Vikratir Hladini Shakti Rasmat. There is no difference between Radha and Krishna. They are the one supreme absolute truth. But they are eternally in two separate bodies for the sake of intimate loving exchange. It is not that Krishna manifested himself as Srimati Radharani at a particular period of time. Radharani is Krishna's Ladini Shakti for all of eternity. It is inconceivable to the mundane mind that is limited by the impressions of time to conceive of eternity. Radha and Krishna are one, but in their two separate forms, they are eternally existing. No beginning and no end. And Srimati Radharani, in her eternal love for Krishna, just to make the pastimes for the pleasure of Krishna ever more enjoyable, with infinite, intimate variegatedness, Srimati Radharani personally expands herself as the various inner circle of gopis. Sometimes we hear stories of Chandravali. Chandravali, Padma, and these gopis, they are the rivals of Srimati Radharani. Right wing and left wing, Dakshina and Vama gopis. But we should understand that who is Chandravali? She's Radharani. Srimati Radharani expands herself as Chandravali to create this rivalry just to give more ecstatic experience of pleasure to Krishna. So Krishna is never with anybody except Srimati Radharani. Sometimes we read in stories or we hear. What do we understand? What do we really realize of it? How is it really affecting our hearts? We should be honest. But we hear about these stories that Krishna is in a kunja with Chandravali
And Srimati Radharani is feeling morose that he's with another gopi. But actually, Krishna can never be satisfied with any gopi except Srimati Radharani. And Chandravali is simply Radharani in another form, who appears as a competitor just to bring more pleasure to Krishna. So yes, these Paramapreshta Sakis, these intimate gopis, are all personal expansions of Srimati Radharani's qualities. Her own self manifests in this way. And of all of the gopis, the most confidential associate of Srimati Radharani is Lalita Sakhi. And now we will begin today's class. Today we are celebrating Lalita Sakhi's appearance. Most auspicious day. All the gopis, all the categories of gopis in the whole spiritual world are under the direction of Lalita Sakhi. She is the constant companion of Srimati Radharani. Rupa Goswami explains that her complexion is a yellowish gold color that is like hundreds of millions of full moons in the autumn radiating simultaneously. You have seen the full autumn moon when it's just rising, its golden color. That brilliance multiplied by millions is the complexion of Lalita Sakhi. Her beauty, her charm is unlimited. And she wears clothes which are the color of the feathers of a peacock. Why does she wear peacock-colored clothes? Because the peacock feather reminds Srimati Radharani of Krishna and gives her happiness. These gopis of Vrindavan, what is their love? I'll give an example. The qualities of the gopis' love are revealed to the world in very accessible ways through the associates of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. One of the intimate loving gopis of Braj is Brinda Devi. Brinda Devi, how she orchestrates incredible arrangements for Radha and Krishna's happiness in the spiritual world. That Brinda Devi appeared within this world as Mukunda Sarakara in Srikanda. He was a physician, but he had the full-fledged ecstasy of the gopi Brinda Devi in his heart. This is Mukunda Sarakar, intimate associate of Lord Chaitanya, the brother of Narahari and the father of Raghunandan. Now, you know the story. When Mukunda was speaking to the Mughal king and giving him some prescription for medicine while the king was on a raised platform and the sun was burning hot, so someone came with a shade that was made of peacock feathers, and as soon as Mukunda saw that peacock feather, he thought of Krishna. As soon as he sees a peacock feather, he immediately remembers Krishna and went into such an ecstatic state that he fell unconscious and rolled right off the platform onto the ground. The Muslim king came running down to see if he was dead or alive. He came to consciousness. So what happened? Are you all right? And Mukunda said, yes, yes, I am all right. I am feeling no pain. There is no problem. Well, why did you fall? What happened? Now, he could have boasted his ecstasies of his love for Krishna. But what is the nature of a real devotee? Their ecstasies of love of Krishna are something very private that they keep concealed within the chambers of their heart. It's not for the cheap adoration of the public. If you want that, you'll get that. But if you want Krishna, your love has to be something very private. This is humility. He said, actually, I have a disease, something like epilepsy, and sometimes I get into these fits, and I go unconscious and I fall down. I'm sorry. But even the king understood that this is because of ecstatic love of Krishna. But he's so humble, he's not willing to admit it. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Mukunda Sarakar in Puri. He said, are you the father of Raghunandan? Or is Raghunandan your father? Now, does this question make sense? It's like if I ask Krishna Chandra, are you the father of Priyavrat, or is Priyavrat your father? Mukunda Sarakar said that Raghunandan is my father because he has inspired me in Krishna consciousness. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was so happy by that answer. He said, yes, one who inspires us in Krishna consciousness, he is our father, he is our guru. So this is Mukunda. Such a humble position he's taking. He's eager to be inspired by others. His own little son. He's considering himself superior to him. So this is the mood of the gopis. Always to take that humble position. Never to want credit. Never to want anything for oneself. But to give all credit to others. To see everyone else better than ourselves. That is the mood of the gopis. So Lalita Sakhi, she wears clothes that are the color of the peacock feathers to help Srimati Radharani always remember with pleasure Shyam Sundar, her eternal beloved. And her service is to be the protector and the guardian of Srimati Radharani. In fact, Srimati Radharani considers Lalita Sakhi to be her Shiksha Guru. Lalita Sakhi will instruct Radharani that Srimati Radharani may feel very morose that Krishna has done something. And she feels very humbled by that. And Lalita Sakhi will say, no, he does not understand the power of your love. He is minimizing you. You should sit straight with dignity. Why are you running outside so fast? You just ate. Oh, you're going out to meet Krishna, but you haven't tied your sari properly? This is Lalita Sakhi. And Srimati Radharani, if she makes a mistake, she shakes in fear of the chastisement of Lalita Sakhi. And Lalita Gopi, she is so
totally faithful to Srimati Radharani that she will even chastise Krishna. She will even stand guard and not allow Krishna entrance into Radharani's garden. And she will tell Krishna, "You do not understand the nature and the depth of my mistress's love to you. Why you are taking it so cheaply?" But we should understand. Rupa Goswami explains that in her service, sometimes chastising, sometimes teaching, sometimes even becoming angry upon Krishna, it is all with the deepest affection. What is the nature of Lalita Gopi's love? That when she sees even a tiny drop of perspiration on the lotus feet of either Radha or Gopinath, it's as if she assumes 1 million bodies to eagerly jump up and remove that spot of perspiration. That is her unconditional love. It is explained by our acharyas that no one can enter into the entrance of Radha and Krishna's pastimes without the permission and the blessings of Lalita Gopi. And anyone who goes to Vrindavan and has that aspiration, that desire to be the servant of the servant of the servant of Srimati Radharani, Lalita Gopi will bring that personality into the circles of Radha and Krishna's Leela, bless that devotee, and fulfill all that devotee's desires. So therefore, in the line of the six Goswamis, we pray to Lalita Sakhi for that pure love of being the servant of the servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath. The direct assistant of Lalita Sakhi is Rupa Manjari, who appears in this world as Rupa Goswami. Under Lalita Sakhi's direction, Rupa Manjari is the leader of all the Manjaris, very young gopis, about 12 or 13 years old or less, who are immersed always in assisting. The nature of Manjaris is they never, ever, ever want to be with Krishna directly. Their eternal service is simply the servant of the servant of the servant of Srimati Radharani in her service to Krishna. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that Srimati Radharani is like the creeper which is embracing Krishna. And the manjaris and gopis are like the flowers on that creeper. They do not touch Krishna directly. They have no desire, no aspiration to do so. However, when Srimati Radharani embraces Krishna, the substance of the pleasure of the creeper nourishes each flower. To want to approach Krishna directly is not the mood of the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But to be the servant of the servant of the servant, Gobi Bartur Badakamalayora Dasa Dasa Das Anudas, to be the servant of the servant of the servant, in that humble line, we actually are nourished directly with Srimati Radharani's ecstasy of love for Krishna. And we don't care for that. We simply want to assist. But it comes anyway as reciprocation. This is Vrindavan. And the six Goswamis are these most confidential assistants of Lalita Gopi in the spiritual world. Rupa Goswami is Rupa Manjari. Sanatan Goswami, Lavanga Manjari. Raghunath Bhat Goswami is Ras Manjari. Raghunath Das Goswami, Rati Manjari. Gopal Bhatt Goswami is Guna Manjari. Jiva Goswami, Vilas Manjari. Lokanath Goswami is Manjulali Manjari. Bhugarbha Goswami is Prem Manjari. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is Kosturi Manjari. All of the most intimate associates of the spiritual world under the direction of Lalita Sakhi have descended into this world. Why have they descended into this world? To give the ultimate gift of the loving service of Radha and Krishna to us. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahe Anya. Lord Chaitanya is Radha and Krishna. Krishna, who has come to taste the sweetness of Radha's love. Shri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went into deep trances of the highest ecstasies. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita in this way. The symptoms of ecstasy that his body manifest. The volcanic eruptions of love in his heart are unparalleled. It's the ecstasy of the love of Sri Radha. And Lord Chaitanya, in these deepest trances of ecstatic love, is enjoying the sweetest nectar. But that same experience that he's feeling, he's come to distribute it within the world through the chanting of the holy names. Hare Krishna,
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
And the supreme most gopi associate of Srimati Radharani, Lalita Devi, appeared within this world as Srila Swarup Damodar Goswami Maharaj. And this evening, we will describe the nature and the glories of the devotional service of Swarup Damodar Goswami. Because the pastimes of Braj are very intimate and very difficult for a conditioned soul to understand. And almost embarrassing to try to explain in a public setting. Actually, in today's world, sometimes people publicly broadcast Ras Lila in their kathas. They emphasize Ras Lila and the intimate loving affairs of gopis for the purpose of canvassing followers. Because especially in India, it's very popular subject matter. Yes? If you have an advertisement, I am going to discuss Prahlad Maharaj's teachings, you will not get as many people as if you're going to discuss Ras Lila. It's a canvassing technique. But the Ras Lila, the love of the gopis for Krishna, should not be exploited for such a cheap material purpose of attracting people's appreciation and attention to you. It's unpalatable to the heart to even conceive that. No, we don't want to attract people to come to us by speaking Ras Lila or Ras Katha. Not at all. That's not our purpose. These are subject matters that must be approached through very, very pure hearts that are worshipped and honored within the core of our hearts. They should not be exploited for making followers or attracting money. We must understand the dignity. And therefore, the most intimate, loving pastimes of Vrindavan, are most effectively revealed within this world to those who do not have absolutely pure hearts through the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates. No one can approach the conjugal pastimes of Radha and Krishna without the blessings and permission of Lalita Sakhi, hence, who is the constant companion of Srimati Radharani. And in the same way, Swarup Damodar Goswami was the constant companion of Lord Chaitanya as he was experiencing the highest ecstasies of the rasas of Sri Radha. Yes, Mahaprabhu came to give that love to the world through Harinam Sankirtan, through the proper process of bhakti or devotional service. Mahaprabhu Sri Chaitanya has come to give us entrance into the Madhurya Dham, the sweet land of Vrindavan. But he has taught us with the utmost integrity. And who was the person who was really the guardian of the true unadulterated principles of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission? Swarup Damodar Goswami, Lalita Gopi. So this evening, we will continue our class on this most holy and important subject matter. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Premanandi.